Hello and welcome to another Comics Burst from the Full Force podcast, sponsored by Distant Planet Comics and Collectibles, where we take an in-depth look at the newest G.I. Joe comics and related titles of the week, with me as your host, Chris, set phasers to fun, McLeod, aka Diagnostic 80. Joining me on this episode are a right couple of Irish boyos, Paddy, crossover Kryptonite Lennon, and Brian, look at those numbers, Hickey. On this instalment of your absolutely favourite kind of burst, we have the fourth Bumblebee movie prequel issue, the brand new Star Trek vs. Transformers crossover, a very sombre Lost Light, and news of some brand new G.I. Joe titles from IDW on the horizon. So without further ado, let's get stuck into this comics burst. Bumblebee movie prequel number 4. In 1960s England, Bumblebee and his super spy allies infiltrate the Decepticons' clandestine island headquarters. Is it a trap? Of course it's a trap, but in the high-stakes game of counterintelligence, who's trapping who? Now, before I get your thoughts on this, Paddy, a couple of things spring to mind with this issue. Like, I feel like it's got some really good aspects to it, but then, and I don't want to kind of like rush ahead, but I think the ending is mental. I think it's just so not connected to anything we've seen, really. One of the reasons I say that is because, okay, so taking you through briefly, Bumblebee, they've infiltrated this base. It's full of Decepticons. There's the typical, and what we expected happens, doesn't it? You know, the whole Diabla incident. Like, she ends up being like a Russian spy, so she is against the Decepticons, but she's not with Bumblebee, so there is like a nice layer and element to that. So that was a good way around that. But, well, I mean, take me through your thoughts.
It's the same as what we kind of expected, really, isn't it? And yeah, that's kind of a sad way to put it. Nothing in this issue surprised me. Everything was wrapped up the way we kind of predicted it would when we were talking about issues 2 and 3 a few weeks ago. And it just didn't really gel with me.
No.
Like, I just thought it kind of just finished.
Yeah.
And I think I can't say it was a bad comic, because there are some good elements to it. I think Andrew Griffith's art over the 4 issues has been really good.
Really good.
As artwork, it is probably the best looking of the movie tie-in books
ever
IDW have done I just think it works really well because they had a certain style they were going for, and Andrew Griffith is a very good artist and a very good storyteller, so I think that worked really well. I don't think the plot worked as well as maybe I hoped it would.
Yeah.
I think the first issue was really great. The second 2 issues were a bit meh, and this one is a little bit better than the previous 2.
Yeah.
But still not to write home about. So it's kind of it peaked early and didn't really reach those heights again, I think.
What you said there was actually quite interesting, and I do agree with it. I think the good elements I was discussing actually beforehand actually are very, very small, but they're things like the homages, like the underwater car mode that B uses, very much like the James Bond thing when they're fighting Sharktacons. So there's some nice little elements there, and it's the kind of, the Sharktacons are slightly redesigned, but pretty much on point from their original kind of, you know, styling. There isn't any kind of Michael Bay going on in that Sharktacon at all.
No.
I love the panel where he transforms into that kind of underwater vehicle mode. I think that's really nice. But other than that, I felt like, okay, I love the over-the-top missile being launched from the pool. Very James Bond. But everything, like you said, was very formulaic, very obvious. Everyone gets out of it alive, except Diabla. And then this is what really, really upset me. Okay, so she sacrifices herself, not to save Bumblebee, but to, you know, save the world.
We assume.
Yeah, there's a lot of assumption there. And then obviously they get away. The bomb comes back down to where they are and blows up, including killing her, obviously. You know, they see Blitzwing fly away, and he kind of shoots at him just to try and get him. And as they're talking, the two human characters, Reeve and the female operative, are on the kind of, it's like like a tire that they're floating on in the water. And he's like, oh my God, that's Diabla's. I recognize it. And they're saying, oh, I'm sorry. And he basically, from this point on, from the last 1, 2, 3 pages, it just goes really weird. Bumblebee goes a bit odd. And he starts thinking, he starts saying to himself out loud, well, you know, she's alive. And if she is dead and she's covered a trail, then I'm going to go and I'm going to get revenge. And I was like, what kind of bullshit is that? And then the rest of the comic is him going after Blitzwing. Like, there's one page of just all the different panels of him chasing him through different areas of the globe. And then he finally meets him and then, like, puts his, you know, the final panel.
His battle mask on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I just thought, well, hang on, what has that got to do with anything? Like, I just, it was so weird. When's Bumblebee been after revenge? When has revenge been a thing of Bumblebee's character personality?
And revenge for a character who wasn't really on his side either.
No, it's so odd. They even have that conversation again. Like, about halfway through, it's like him saying something about...
Come on, turn over, you used to be one of us.
And she's like, for f*** sake, Bumblebee, for God's sake, I'm not one of you. I am definitely not a Decepticon, but this is the story. And it's like, I feel like she's been holding this back and wanting to say it the whole time, just to shut him up. But yeah, okay, having said all that, what would you give it as a potating, Paddy?
Overall, I think for this issue, it's probably a 3. And I think overall for the series, I think I'd probably end up giving it a 3.5.
I agree. I think that's actually, to be honest, that's actually quite generous, I think. I'm going to give it overall a 3, I think. This particular issue, probably because of those issues, because of that final element, I think it really drags it down for me. So I'm going to come down a half. I'm going to say 2.5 for this issue. But the previous issues, I think, were worse. I'm not sure. We'll have to check the numbers on those. But I just how I feel at the moment. And I think overall, probably 3 potatoes. Well, anyway, that's the end of the movie prequels for Bumblebee. But something that continues and will continue for one more issue, at least, I think. Or is it 2 more issues after this?
It's one more issue.
One more is... Lost Light 24, Last Stand. All they wanted was an adventure. Now, as worlds turn to dust and every sacred truth is undone, as everything they've run from catches up with them and every gruesome future comes to pass. Rodimus and his loved ones just want it all to stop, but the end of the universe waits for no one, and so the survivors of the Lost Light must take up arms for the very last time. What did you think of this one? I'm going straight to you on this one.
Guys, what the hell is happening? After, you know, it's terrible issue, good issue with this fecking series at the moment. This is one of the better issues again.
It's amazing, isn't it? Amazing.
Yeah, but it's like, why, guys? And we've said this before, this last 6 issues in particular, it's like 2 different people are writing the book and not really, communicating with each other as they write it. This is... as good as it's been again, you know? It's madness.
There's way more balance to this one, isn't there, in terms of the like action mixed with talk and kind of, you know, element.
Yes, yeah. And nice little payoffs and nice little character moments and so on. Like, it's one of the better issues they've done of Lost Light since it was rebranded. Which makes the terrible issue that preceded it, the good issue that preceded that, and a terrible issue that preceded that, all the more baffling. It really, really is.
Be honest. Did you well up at any point during the reading of this?
Not really. And I'll tell you why, Chris. I'm kind of ready for this to end.
You see, you're a hard man. Do you know what made me...
I know that sounds horrible.
No worries. I get it.
Since Lost Light has been relaunched as Lost Light, I just haven't been feeling it.
Yeah.
Except for the sporadic issues here and there. So I'm like, you know what, maybe it's just time for this story to have ended.
Yeah.
And realistically, maybe it was time for it to have ended maybe a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So it's nice that we're getting this little bit of payoff. I like the fact that pretty much everybody in the crew gets their little panel, their moment with each other. I'm kind of annoyed Grimlock is now quite clearly never going to be reunited with the Dinobots again.
Yeah.
He has not been with his crew since Maximum Dinobots.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
That's about 8 years ago.
It feels longer, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it's most of a decade ago. Like, it's crazy that, you know, they're gonna have him separated from his crew for 2/3 of their run.
Aww.
A couple of nice bits I liked, where we can spoil this. Rung obviously dies creating the 12 matrices.
Yeah, yes.
Matrixes. And when they use the matrices to destroy Vector Sigma, you know, he uses the energy to spell out, you know, don't forget me.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very, very nice. I'm going to say it here. I think Minimus/Magnus is dead.
No, he's not. He's on the last panel.
Is he?
Yeah, standing up alive in the last panel. Someone actually mentioned this to me the other day. They said he hits the ground and it looks like it breaks his neck. And I'm like, yeah, but he's standing up in the last panel alive. So I'm pretty sure he's not dead.
I'm getting this out here now. No, he's not.
He is.
Last page is...
Yeah, look, you got the little crew. Look, just look between...
Oh, sorry, he is.
He's right just there.
Yeah, okay. He's alive. practically hiding, but alive. It's okay, he didn't die.
I think Whirl's dead.
Whirl looks like he's on the edge.
That's what I welled up with. I thought it was brilliant that he opened one of the Matrixes. I thought that was just genius. And I kind of did expect Megatron to struggle and then obviously give it to Hot Rod, and that did happen. But I was also on the fence thinking, I wonder if they'll let Megatron open it, and then it'll be like, oh, he's an Autobot, you know, for, you know, finally or whatever.
Finally, he's redeemed himself. Yeah, for all his stuff in the functions.
Clearly,
universe.
Millions of deaths doesn't.
Yeah, still weigh on the conscience a bit.
But yeah, really nice payoffs.
One last issue left. I imagine that's going to be give everybody a bit of their send off issue. Like I said, this story arc has been, when it's been good, it's been very, very good. Like, there's two like A grade issues in this last six issues of the series, but the other three being so infuriatingly terrible.
Yeah,
it's kind of hard for me to say, oh, I'm going to miss it when it's gone.
Yeah,
because the quality has just been so all over the shop.
I think the whole universe, I'll be happy when it. And this again, it sounds pretty sad. I'll be happy when it kind of comes to pass and we get something fresh and new. But that's, having said that, not knowing what the fresh and new thing is.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like, it could be that I'm not interested in what they do. You know, it might be the case. I don't know. We haven't seen it yet. And they might come back to the combined universe thing again, possibly. Give that another crack. I don't know. Probably not after what happened. But, you know, with all this talk of the movies and all that kind of stuff, then I'm thinking they might just start, I don't know, keeping it around that for a little while. But obviously you can have two, you can do like a classic styling comic like that, you know, that'll always happen probably.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll await to see what happens with that. One more thing before we give the potatings on this. I did like the little homage to Ultra Magnus's death in the original 87 movie when he's like, or 86, is it 86? When he explodes in different pieces. And I kind of liked how they did that with Minimus Ambus. Him getting, you know, Magnus basically blowing up into loads of pieces and then him falling out at the end. So I felt that was kind of like a nice touch, because not many of the others blew up into many pieces. They either got, like, you know, killed or bits taken off them, or Whirl is a bit knackered. He's like half a person, half a robot now, which I'm really sad about. I kind of do hope that he dies in a weird way, because that will make the impact that much more impressive.
And he will have had it. And he's had a story arc now.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Going from b***ered to seeking redemption to b***ered to being redeemed.
Kind of redeemed, but always being a b***ered, I would say.
Yeah.
And still being
over the course of five or six years, you know.
Still being a b***ered when he's redeemed at that last moment as well. I love that so much. Anyway, what are you going to give it in the potatings department?
It's a 3.5.
3.5 for Lost Light. I'm giving it a 4. I was really, really into this one. And yeah, like you say, we've said what we said. We're going to miss it. We're not going to miss it. Lots of different mixed feelings here because of the topsy-turvy, you know, inconsistency of the run. But again, I suppose you needed all of that came before it to get that feeling in there with all those deaths. So anyway... Mm-hmm. That is Transformers Lost Light. We'll have, hopefully by the next episode, we'll have the last one that we can talk about. But moving on. Star Trek versus Transformers Issue 1. The Transformers 80s cartoon series meets Star Trek the Animated Series in a no-holds-barred Saturday morning mashup for the ages. At the edge of Klingon space, the Starship Enterprise finds there's more to the final frontier than meets the eye. Nice. When Kirk and his crew come face to face with the strangest life forms of all, Cybertronians. This unprecedented crossover brings together two of the greatest science fiction universes of all time, in the style of their classic animated series. A 5-year mission meets a 4 million year war. Now, I bloody love this, but I want to get your thoughts straight on. Go for it, Paddy.
It's called crack, isn't it?
Oh, it's fantastic.
Like, it's
oh, it's great.
I wasn't expecting huge things from it, other than from the artist, who we'll talk about in a minute. But I wasn't expecting a huge amount, because I don't know. Do you remember the Star Trek animated series at all, Chris?
Oh, look, this. I know you're gonna disagree with me on this, because I actually loved the animated series as a kid, because we used to get them as reruns, didn't we? Because obviously it had been on kind of before our time.
It's one of those things that was on Sky TV back when it launched.
Yeah, yeah.
They were desperately trying to fill the airwaves. They would stick on stuff like this. Like Filmation stuff from the middle of no time, you know,
yeah,
or Hanna-Barbera stuff from the '60s, and so I was familiar with it. Actually, that's how initially I think I was introduced to Star Trek, because I saw it before, the next generation remake that turned up.
Probably the same, yeah.
So I have very few memories of the show because it was on so long ago. But what memories I have were quite fond memories.
Yeah.
Especially since you could tell the cast, even as a child I could tell, the cast really aren't into doing the voices here very well.
Yeah. I mean, it's very slow paced, isn't it? I mean, but what I do like about it is it builds tension in a lot of episodes, and it is dark as f***.
And like Star Trek itself, it has some really good science fiction story writing in there.
Yes.
You know, kind of doing those old tropes, but doing them in a kids'
doing
show.
Doing really well, yeah, yeah.
Which even now is kind of unheard of.
Totally.
So I have the fond memories of the show. I'm just going to come out and say it. Phil Murphy is a goddamn legend for matching those two art styles.
Genius.
Almost perfectly.
You can get away with it, because I suppose one of the styles is the robots, isn't it? So there's...
Yeah.
You can, if you've got two kind of human aspects, I mean, at Spike, if they do use him, or Daniel, if they do use him, that might be more difficult to do. But they've done it. I mean... Phil Murphy's done a wonderful job with the art. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So I really liked that, and I think that is probably the high point of the issue, is just how well he managed to get that looking as well as it does. A couple other things I like there. There's a couple of G1 designs of more recent characters. Like, there's a G1 version of Black Arachnia.
Yes.
As a helicopter, which I think that design really works.
And she's a great character. She's really written well in that as well, isn't she? Like, kind of like flirting with Kirk as well. That's great.
So yeah, I think it's really good. Like I said, there's not much really to... It's quite a light comic.
Yeah.
Let's not beat around the bush. There's not much to talk about in it. But it is a lot of fun. And I'm really looking forward to see what else they do with the series as it goes on.
Me too. What's happening in the comic is that the Star Trek crew... are basically coming to, you know, they're seeing these Transformers for the first time, and it's like, obviously, the kind of the meeting of the crew and the Decepticons. Prime comes in, and then they're shooting at Prime, thinking he's a bad guy as well, because there's all this kind of, you know, chaos going all over the place. They get out of the way when Prime and the crew turn the tide. And that's how the Klingons and the Decepticons meet. They're kind of parked up near Trypticon, the Klingons, and they end up having this kind of... which I think is always thing is quite funny. It's like, I know you have to obviously get these guys together to kind of, you know, collaborate. I always find I always find it funny that the Decepticons would even give a crap about the Klingons either. And I'm sure, like in real life, they would have just obliterated them immediately anyway. Like, I always find that quite hilarious. But obviously, they're a team now. The Klingons are with the Decepticons, and what it looks like the crew are going to be with the Autobots. When you see the final panel, and you've got the Ark exposed, and you've got Bumblebee, Jazz, Ratchet, Windblade in a G1 styling, and RC. So yeah, I love it. I thought it was great. And all this does, when I'm reading this, I'm thinking, it's been said numerous times. We've said it on this show so many times, years previous, that G.I. Joe Sunbow would be brilliant in comic form. You know, off the back of like the movie or something. You know, kind of taking up the little bit between, say, the movie and kind of maybe overdoing the Deke cartoon a little bit. Do you know what I mean? Like, kind of,
or just bring G.I. Joe back to basics. It doesn't even need to be a Sungo or continuation. Just take that idea of, here's the team.
We're
not going to worry too much about continuity.
Good point. Like they've done in this
issue.
Yeah, you're right.
Just bring it back to first principles and say, let's just have fun with these characters.
Totally.
Again.
And yeah, like, and a crossover with Transformers would be bloody brilliant, wouldn't it? Like a Sunbow. Oh, anyway, just thinking about that makes me feel funny. But then that's when you could bring in some really cool crossover events. Like, you know, you could reanimate the Inhumanoids into that. You could have lots of other different things work in the cartoon basis.
Chris, as I've explained, we're going to stop that.
Yeah, sorry. I forgot about your conspiracy. Anyway, with all that said and done, Paddy, what would you give Star Trek versus Transformers Issue 1 as a potating?
I think it's a 4.
Nice. I'm going to go full on Brian Hickey. No, I'm not. I'm going to rein in the Brian Hickiness, and I'm going to say 4.5. I bloody loved it. I think it does. It should not lose points. You know, it doesn't need to lose points, but I think some element of the plot not being as thick as, you know, as it could be. And again, it's just, you know, fun and action, but there's nothing wrong in that, really.
I reserve 5 potatoes for Watchmen and The Dark Knight Returns and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Batman Year One. So, you know, I'm hoarding my potatoes because there might be another famine any day, Chris.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. You conserve your potatoes while Brian spreads his around like a dirty potato farmer.
And he'll not be coming to me when the famine hits, I tell you that much.
Anyway, thank you so much for jumping on, Paddy. Before you go, could you maybe give us Paddy's pick for this week?
Yeah, it's not really out this week because I'm not buying enough comics on a monthly basis. But I just wanted to, something we mentioned, I think, on our interview with Nick Roach and something we were reading at the moment.
Yeah.
I wanted to give another shout out to Bad Machinery, which is I guess it's young adult comic book.
Yeah.
About a team of two competing teams of teenage detectives, and it's set in, I guess it's the north of England.
Nice.
It's very, very funny. The art is really nice, kind of cartoonish, but enjoyable. Yeah. It's very, very smart, very nicely put together. Only Press are reprinting it from the start and have been for the last, I think, 8 to 12 months. So they're kind of getting a trade out every month or two.
Yeah.
So you can collect the whole thing, and they're costing nothing. I think you get the trades at about a tenner each on Amazon.
Brilliant.
Or less. So it's very, very readable. If any of our listeners have kids, and maybe they do, it's the sort of thing, if you want to get your kids into reading, it may not be a bad place to start.
Awesome. That's really cool. I'll flash that up, obviously, so we can get, you know, have an idea of what it's like. But that's another one that I'm getting interested in now. Thanks for adding that to my pull list. Brilliant. Thank you for jumping on, Paddy. Really appreciate it. We're going to lose you now, and we're going to pick up a Brian Hickey for the last bit of the show. So thank you, mate.
No water.
Joining me now is Brian Hickey. We've shedded Paddy Lennon, and we've grown a Brian Hickey. to talk about a few pretty out-of-the-blue news elements for G.I. Joe comics. That is, last week, news dropped on the Nerdist website of a brand new IDW G.I. Joe title called Sierra Muerte, to be written, drawn, lettered, and coloured by Copra creator Michel Fife. The story will follow all the usual suspects as the Joes launch a daring and rogue rescue mission while forces within Cobra attempt to thwart Cobra Commander and Storm Shadow goes missing. The reveal so far has received mixed reviews, with a lot of similarities being drawn to Tom Scioli's Transformers/G.I. Joe crossover, with the quirky art style in some of the shown pages. As well as that news, we were treated to a number of Twitter posts by IDW Joe editor Tom Waltz, who explained that Dawn Moreno and Duke would be starring in brand new one-shots this coming January. The comics will be written by Larry Hammer and feature art by Kay Zammer and other special guests. I mean, what do we think of this news then, Brian? Let's start with Sierra Muerte. Is this exciting you in any way?
I love the name. Don't really know what Sierra Muerte means, but
that
it sounds
pretty
sexy.
Goes on Google to look.
I just imagine Paddy doing one of his Antonio Banderas impressions and straight away I'm turned on. I'm curious to see what happens. I mean, the synopsis there, it sounds like it's maybe a reboot on the G.I. Joe continuity that had been running sort of alongside Real American Hero. It doesn't sound like they're kind of carrying on with that particular continuity.
Oh yeah, this is a separate thing entirely, I believe.
Totally separate. So I'm definitely going to buy the first issue. I'll be curious to see how this pans out. The synopsis, yeah, I mean, I can. You know, rogue rescue mission, kind of like the thoughts of that. The art, let's just talk about the art a little bit. That kind of very flat, very 2D style. I kind of have a love-hate relationship with that.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure how I feel about it. I don't hate it, but I don't love it either. Maybe that's part of the problem.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah. I mean, I think like from what I've seen so far, I'm quite interested. But a couple of things kind of jump out to me from the start. One it's this constant return to the same core character usage, which kind of bothers me a little bit. When you think about how rich the G.I. Joe history is, even in the vintage line, where you go from 82 all the way through to 94, the amount of characters in that, it just in that little block of time, are so huge and vast. I think maybe like 1/10 of it is used on a regular basis. And what that does is it constantly brings up reboots, reimaginings, but with the same look, same designs, and so on and so forth. And I kind of want, I don't know, I kind of want something else to look at now. I don't want to keep getting the same stuff. And this could be nice. It could be like a departure from what's been done previously. I haven't really seen much of Copra or some of the other stuff that Fife has been involved in, but he has a really recognizable style, and I think that it can work. Even like the Tom Scioli stuff, again, is a completely different thing entirely. Like the drawings that you can compare the two in quirkiness, but certainly not in style. Like there's a very, very different style going on there. And I'm a little bit concerned that we're getting the same core characters. I'm a little concerned that it's just going to be the same thing really that we've had, and it'll just be like maybe to boost some sales and stuff. But then at the same time, it's a new creator. He's got full control of everything here, writing, drawing, much like Tom Scioli had a huge amount of control on his book. So we, you know, it could be good, it could be great, it could be awful. We'll wait and see on that one. But I'm similar to you. I'm like excited to a degree, but then there are so many other things that hit me that I'm like, oh, but it's the same thing again, you know?
A couple of things there, right? So you have Michel Fife's got, he's the writer, the colorist, the artist. That gives him a lot of control. And as long as the publisher is willing to give him a bit of, you know, freedom too, he actually could pull something pretty amazing together.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't have that sort of, not that there's necessarily conflict between artists and writers, but sometimes the vision, you know, and we've heard this from other writers being interviewed here on The Full Force, sometimes the vision they have for the story doesn't always get delivered by the artist.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get that conflict of visions, which is normal when you have, you know, multiple creatives all trying to interpret something in their own way. So that's a plus, I think, that Michel Fife is doing all of this. He's got that control.
Yeah. More cohesive that way, isn't it, as well? Like,
absolutely. He can have a very clear vision and he can deliver that.
It's not like he has to communicate something that's going to take that's going to take time to communicate to the inker or the artist or whatever, and vice versa. It's one of those things where he is the one talking to himself and he can just, you know, put it out there as intended.
100%. And so I'd be very hopeful in that regard. Just on your point about the core characters, that's always going to be something that G.I. Joe will struggle with, because there's so many characters. It's very difficult to build a cohesive universe around such a variety of characters. So it's easier to latch on to a core group and to just rehash them over and over again. I'm not saying that it's right to always do that, but it definitely makes it much easier for the creative. And then if we look at the IDW G.I. Joe verse, we've had, as you say, the same characters coming up again and again, and that brings familiarity for a lot of people. So maybe for new fans jumping on board who may not be familiar with all that history and all that backstory that from the 80s, they can latch on to the Lady J's and the Flints and the Dukes and the Stalkers and the Roblox and Scarlet and Snake Eyes. And it's a more digestible universe. If you were to suddenly throw some very obscure characters into the mix, it could all open up a lot of opportunities creatively. But is there a big enough market there to really buy into that?
I totally understand where you're coming from there. I would argue the point that Turtles comic, it has an established core, but brings in characters all the time. Like, you have new characters being brought into the comic to be developed, like, you know, villains or other heroes that they bring in. And it is constant. It's like two or three an issue. And then you look at the Transformers books, they have their core characters, but then they're constantly bringing in, characters left, right and centre.
Yes.
You could argue that A Real American Hero does that too. It started to improve on that. And I'm loving the fact that the new story arc is really centred around Bomb Strike, the silent option one, sorry, Bomb Strike, Torpedo, Alpine, etc. So you've got some kind of fringe elements in there. And that, I think, for me, is something that I've always yearned for. I will be happy to have the core characters every time in an ongoing comic. If it's good, if it's a good ongoing comic, I'm happy to see Duke, Scarlet, so on and so forth every single time. What my problem is now, and we'll kind of come on to the next part of this chat, Dawn Moreno and Duke are getting a one-shot each in January. Now, Dawn Moreno, I'm totally cool with. You know, the more we see of Dawn, the more kind of she's developed a little bit. I'm happy with. I'd like to see that. But Duke, we just had a Duke special mission. Why do we need another Duke one-shot? Surely the opportunity here is to give people, when you've got a one-shot, more insight into certain characters that haven't already had so much development you don't care about them. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm at the point now where with Duke, whenever I hear Duke's going to get another comic, I'm like, really? Another one-shot for Duke? And I'm thinking, after we're talking like a couple of months since his last, like, you know, solo issue, and he's in the comic all the time. So it's, I kind of think like, well, okay, fine, you know, but it just doesn't excite me. I'm thinking, what an opportunity. I thought the special missions was a good opportunity to do special missions as it was, getting loads of, you know, other characters, a bit of light shone on them. I must admit, I was really into a lot of those issues, just the single issues. Duke actually was probably my least favourite of the, you know, of those comics. But again, like, do I need to see Destro again? Probably not. Do I need to see the Baroness again? Probably not. Do I need to see Scarlet again? Probably not. I'm really glad that they were moving towards Bombstrike as a field team leader. So we're going to get more of her. And she seems to be very, like, liked. She seems to be like a character that has got a lot of popularity behind her. And she seems to be someone that has got a really interesting kind of, you know, just a new face, really, and I'm happy for that. And again, like, I'd be happy with Duke and Scarlet and so on in their ongoing and continuing on one time stream, but surely utilize those other titles for the expansion of the rest of this massive cast.
I kind of want to put my faith in Larry Hama on this one.
Yeah.
Like, okay, yes, we did get that Duke one shot there a couple of months back, and that story, while Duke was in the story, it didn't feel like it was a Duke story.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it was focused more on some of the other characters in there. But Larry Hama he's got a history of, he's always thinking many, many issues ahead. And, you know, what I would hope is that if there's going to be another Duke one shot here, that it's to set up something, some major events that will happen in Real American Hero later in 2019.
Yeah, I hope so. I do hope so. And I'm sure when we get it and we read it, I'll be happy with it. But I'm still just like, I don't know, I get to the point where it's like, the Sierra Muerte is a certain era of Joe, but it's the era we know it. We know this era. Like, everyone, you know, if people want to jump on, they can jump on to other issues and trades that have happened that have got, you know, like the Marvel run or the IDW runs and so on and so forth. Devil's Due, Image, there's tons of things to jump onto. In terms of new stuff, like, I don't mind if we're rebooting the universe and starting another ongoing, which I don't think is going to happen. I think a Real American Hero is probably going to carry the G.I. Joe comic torch now for a long time. I don't think IDW are going to do a separate G.I. Joe comic for a long time, personally. They'll do these little one-shot offshoot things, but I don't see them doing an ongoing again, or at least for a while, after all of the crap that happened with the last one. And so with that, I worry that, you know, we're not going to get... And okay, yeah, you can look at it from, you know, you could say that it's a very selfish point of view from mine, just because I want to see, you know, lots of vintage characters get their shine. But I kind of think that there's so many, I mean, this, you know, Transformers manage it. Lost Light's got loads of characters in it. Loads of, like, again, fringe characters that haven't really been given the time of day for years, haven't had no history. And all of a sudden you've got really cool character development going through these amazing characters. Same with most of the Transformers comics over the 13 years that they've been running. With G.I. Joe as well, yes, you could argue A Real American Hero has had lots of different characters come in and out and dropped in the background and so on and so forth, but nothing, I don't think there's been much development in a lot of those fringe characters. We still see the main core cast getting a lot of the, I would say, the kind of the panels and the speech bubbles and stuff like that, but we don't see any development or really any usage out of so many other specialists. And I think that's where special missions would be brilliant. I think it would be a really good opportunity to have, like, okay, there's a specific mission in the Arctic, so let's get loads of those Arctic Joes. Let's get, you know, I don't mind seeing Duke in his winter garb in that one, as long as he's got, like, a ton of other Joes with him. You know, okay, one of my favourite ever storylines was a winter one where, I think it was in G.I. Joe Frontline, and it basically had bunch of Joes being called out to some sort of distress signal in the middle of nowhere, like freezing cold Alaska or something, and it was like a station where people have been working. So they get there and it's all, like, you know, sealed up and everything. They break in and they start uncovering loads of kind of crazy stuff. They find, like, Cobra files and all this kind of stuff, you know, lots of, like, I don't know, evidence of struggles and blood and all this kind of stuff. And it turns out Cobra had been doing experiments there, and it was very, very, like, old school horror style, you know, like they're being, like, chased, or not chased, but they're stalked by whatever this weird creature is the whole time. They find the distress signal, and it's guy underground in, like, some sort of, he got, you know, he kind of fell through the floor into, like, this, like, underground cavern and was on this, like, little island in the middle of the water with this, like, flare. And he's the one that set the distress signal off, and they find him, they rescue him, and he's trying to tell them, you know, you need to get out of here, you should have left me to die, you shouldn't have come here, I feel bad for setting this signal off in the first place. And then they're basically kind of tracked by this creature. And it was brilliant. And it was, like, it had all the elements of, like, sci-fi G.I. Joe, military G.I. Joe. It had fringe characters. It had core characters. It had everything. And I just loved it for that. I thought it was brilliant. It was like a two-parter as well.
That actually sounds amazing, what you just described there.
It's fantastic. But I loved it when they had these cute little missions. And that wasn't even a special mission comic. But, like, when they had, like, a thing of, like, this has happened, we need to send a specific team out there to deal with it. And I just think that's a great opportunity to get your Lightfoots and your Downtowns. I always use them because they're, like, really obscure. good opportunity to get those kind of guys involved. And, you know, like, even some, like, Cobra operatives that we don't see that often, like, you know, a Viper or a, you know, like, Dreadnoughts that don't get much of a shout. You could redo kind of like there was a really good Action Force comic with Outback and Psych Out back in the day. And it was basically, they're in the outback in, like, Australia, and Psych Out's, like, and out, he's basically trying to do an evaluation of Outback, of his mental state, and they're in the, you know, they're camping out in the middle of nowhere, and the Dreadnoughts get involved, and then there's this kind of, like, battle and everything. It was just really good, and I just thought something like that would be really cute, where you highlight a couple of guys that don't get much of a showing in the comics that often. I mean, Outback is a massive character, but I could count on, like, one hand the amount of times I've actually seen him developed. Once in the Marvel run, where he was, like, a pretty big character in that whole, you know, kind of escape from prison in a different country storyline, and he left the other guys behind, and then they all hated him for it, or, you know, all the people back home, and it turned out that he'd been ordered but couldn't say anything about it, he couldn't tell anyone about it, so he just had to take the abuse from everyone, and I thought that was, like, a really good issue, but I want to see these guys developed, you know?
In fairness, there is plenty of opportunity to, you know, when you look at that, like, the character roster in the G.I. Joe lineup, yeah, there's so much opportunity to dig a little bit deeper. And maybe, you know, you described that, you know, small, should say, two-shot issue there. Wouldn't it be great if they were to bolt on at the end of, say, A Real American Hero, a shorter story at the end. And I know they've started doing that in the last couple of issues that we've talked about. But I remember when I used to buy the 2000 AD reissues back in the 90s, or the quality comics, they would have sort of a main 2000 AD character story, and then they would have a bolt-on story at the end of that from another character. And it just gave a little bit more content. But the bolt-on stories, they didn't run for you know, 8 or 9, 10 issues. They were just, you know, 2 or 3 issues. Some of them, even the story would be contained in a single issue.
Yeah,
it's a nice way to get that extra bit of content in there and maybe introduce, you know, some of these other characters, even if they're not in the main roster in the main story. There should be plenty of scope to have these kind of smaller missions off to the side, like you say. I think that would be brilliant to see that.
I just dream of the day we can have A Real American Hero running in one lane, Special Missions running in the other lane, or call it something else, or even some sort of, like, you know, like the Transformers Spotlight series, just something where you get, like, an absolutely, like, you know, regular like every week or so you get every month or so you get a character spotlight on someone that doesn't always get their shine. I mean, I'd take, like, early on, I'd take your, you know, Alpine, who, let's face it, has had a big amount of coverage in the Sumbo cartoon. He's had coverage in the comics. He's had coverage in the recent comics. So I'd happily have an Alpine, you know, spotlight for, say, one issue, like a cute story that focuses on his specialties, you know. And then after that, you could start maybe dipping into some of the wells where, you know, like Outback again, like get again like another solid fringe character, I would call them, where it's, you know, it's not someone that's used every single time, but someone that we're well versed on, but they could get like a shout. And then you could start dipping into some really obscure and just keep going until, you know, that could run for ages, because I guarantee. Well, I personally would love that. I'd be picking that up every time, get really excited to see what this particular character's story was going to be like.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, if they did that, like, that would be brilliant, I think. And on top of that, Paddy and I mentioned this before when we were talking about Star Trek versus Transformers, but a Sunbow-style G.I. Joe comic would be really cute as well, I think. And I think would work really well with a crossover with the Transformers too. Like, if they didn't think it would be strong enough initially, they could definitely bring out a G.I. Joe Transformers crossover Sunbow style, because I think that would be beautiful,
excellent.
Wouldn't it?
That would be excellent.
Cool. Yeah.
Oh, we're just getting into wet dream stuff.
Well, anyway, well, let's get back to the main point, or get back to it. We'll finish on the main point. Sierra Muerte is coming out. I'll look forward to seeing what that's about. The art, I must admit, I am intrigued by the art. I think there's a lot of, like, nice 90s-esque type elements in there too. And of course, the Dawn Moreno and the Duke one-shots, I will be getting them. Dawn Moreno, I'm more excited for. I love her little end, that little end story on the back of the last issue that we read. I think it wasn't Silent Option, was it? It was the other...
No.
256 maybe?
256, I think, yeah. It was, yes. And she had escaped from the training interrogation camp. And
so good.
That was great.
So I'm really looking forward to her one shot. Duke's not as much, but I'm not gonna moan and say, like, I don't want it. I will definitely pick it up and I'll definitely check it out. It's just really, for me, it's the concerns. That's all. Like, I don't dislike Duke at all. I loved the character, but I'm even looking at ease on my desk at the moment. 1000 Toys Bait Duke, which I thought was really, really cool. I don't think many other people did, but I love him. I think he's fantastic.
On the Duke one, right? Let me just throw this out here. The last Duke one shot we got, Duke was very much a passenger in that story.
Fair enough.
An observer in that story. Do you know what would be great? Duke gets trapped behind enemy lines.
Yeah.
And he's got no support.
Yeah.
Nobody's coming to help him. And he has to show us how much of a bad he is as he single-handedly battles his way through the enemy troops and you know, the bad guys, whether they're Cobra or whether there's some kind of terrorist organization in some fictitious African state or whatever, you know, he is milling through them because he's so badass. He's called Duke for a reason.
Yeah.
He's one of the top brass in G.I. Joe for a reason.
That's a really, really good point.
And we get to see that reason.
That's a really good point. I don't think ever at any point, I mean, in that last Destro one shot, all you can say is that is bad. Like, he is a bad character to the bone. But with characters like Duke, you never really see what makes him so important. You never, I mean, you know, you write in and tell me I'm wrong, but like, he's just there and he's just doing things, but it's never really like, I never really see Duke do something that makes me think, oh my God, what, that's awesome. But with Snake Eyes, I see it every time Snake Eyes is in a comic. I just go, wow, that's incredible. With Duke, it's just like, it's almost like he just, you know, he kind of does the usual soldier stuff, and then Snake Eyes turns up and does something bad. Or Scarlet. I see Scarlet do more bad things than Duke. So
they have Duke locked in the pit, shining a seat with his ass, right? They need to put him on the front line,
and
have him kicking some ass. So all that said, now I'm psyched for this.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. You've changed my mind now. Now I want to see him being bad. But yeah, and that's the thing, is, well, not every character is going to be like that. Not every character is going to be like that. But if someone that's in charge of, like, you know, like field sergeant or whatever he is, master sergeant, I think, or whatever you know he is in G.I. Joe. He leads, you know, men and women most of the time. Like, he leads the team. So you know, and I mean like in the field. So I kind of feel like, yeah, he needs to kind of prove it now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking that last arc there where the we've got Bomb Strike and the guys are trapped in Cobra's base with Dr. Venom.
Yes.
And Duke is back in the pit. He's just, you just see him in the control room.
Yeah.
And that's the only time you see him.
And you could argue again that Ambush, Sightline and Bomb Strike are in that comic, and Dr. Venom and Mindbender to a degree. So you could argue with my point earlier on of there not being enough, you know, characters being utilized, but there are. And in A Real American Hero, yes, there are. And they do get utilized. But I'd love, it's really the highlight, the spotlight I want to see on some of them. But I'm happy at the moment with the way that we are getting all of these characters. I don't get me wrong, it's just when we get the news of another one shot for Duke, that's what sets me back. So don't get me wrong, I think that it is actually going that direction, really, when you think about it, especially in A Real American Hero. But anyway, with all that said, Brian, what's your Brian's best this week?
Well, I'm a little bit behind on my Joe comics, but I have been reading some pretty amazing titles the last couple of weeks. I picked up trade paperback of Redlands,
okay,
with Vanessa Del Rey as the artist, and I just can't think of the writer's name on that now. But that is a fantastic book. But it's not going to be my Brian's best this week.
Wow.
This week, my Brian's best is going to be Rogue Trooper, The Early Years.
Nice.
By Jerry Finley Day, Battle Action Force writer as well, and Dave Gibbons on the art. And just to say, this IDW have reissued a trade with all those early Rogue Trooper stories from 2000 AD. They've coloured them all up, so they would have been originally printed in black and white, so they're newly coloured. It's a very nicely put together TP, so it looks really, really good. It's worth a few quid. Highly recommend you pick it up. But absolutely loving that. And of course, I was inspired to buy that on the back of ourselves talking about Jerry Finley Day and an issue of Disorder Battle.
Yeah.
And then finding out, you know, literally the next day that Rogue Trooper got the green light for a movie. It's
nice.
It's a phenomenal piece of writing. The artwork, the character design by Dave Gibbons, and the storytelling by Jerry Finley Day. It's an anti-war story when you read it. It's a war story with an anti-war message.
Yeah.
It's a powerful, powerful piece of writing, and you know, pure genius from, again, the British comics industry in the 1980s.
Fantastic. Thank you, Brian. Thank you again for jumping on and chatting with me about comics and that. Hopefully we'll have some more G.I. Joe actual comics soon to actually discuss on the show. But thanks again for jumping on, mate.
Oh, absolutely loved it. Cheers, buddy.
And we'll be getting on a Disorder of Battle very soon, hopefully, you know, in the next couple of weeks or so. And you'll hear from Brian again then. That's it for this installment of the Full Force Comics Burst. Thank you to my awesome co-hosts, Paddy and Brian. See you next time. And as always, Full Force. Make sure you get involved with the discussion by liking, sharing, and commenting on these videos. And as always, you can keep up with the show after listening by following on Twitter @TheFullForce, liking the Facebook page, facebook.com/TheFullForce. And if you would like to contact the show, you can message us on either of those platforms with feedback, questions, or just a troll. Look out for more of these comic bursts on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, our Facebook page, Twitter feed, and YouTube channel from now on. Full Force. And a big shout out to our sponsors, Distant Planet Comics and Collectibles, located at 601 Business Loop 70 West Suite 263, located in the Parkade Center, Columbia, Missouri. You can visit their website at distantplanetcomics.com and on Facebook at facebook.com/distantplanetcomics.